welcome to Addressing Alaskans, a program capturing community conversations in South Central Alaska. Join us each week on KSKA as we travel to different spots throughout our community and listen to local groups gather to discuss what matters to Alaskans. This week, Republican Senate nominee Joe Miller, Democratic Senate nominee Scott McAdams, and incumbent Lisa Murkowski, who will run as a write-in candidate for Senator of Alaska, face off in a forum hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. Recorded on Monday, October 11th, at the Denina Center in Anchorage, Chair of the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce Board of Directors, Bill Evans, served as moderator of the Senatorial Candidate Forum.
All right. Good afternoon again, everybody. And welcome to the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce Make It Monday Forum. I'm Bill Evans. I'm the chair of the Anchorage Chamber Board of Directors and a partner with the law firm of Cedar, Wendland, Evans, and Filippi. Today, we welcome three candidates running for U.S. Senate. Here's the format for today's forum. The program will begin with five rounds of questions covering a variety of topics of interest to our members. In two of the rounds, the questions are individually tailored for each candidate, and in the other three rounds, the same question will be posed to each candidate. The candidates will have 2.5 minutes to respond to each question. We wanted to make sure there was a long enough response time so that we can get beyond the sound bites. After the five rounds of questions presented by the Anchorage Chamber, the candidates themselves will be able to ask one question to any one candidate of their choice. They will also have 2.5 minutes to respond to the candidate's question. We will then turn to the always exciting questions from the audience. The candidate will be given 1 minute to answer each question posed from the audience. I highly encourage each of you to think of questions you'd like to ask the candidates. Write down your questions on the recycled squares of paper at your table and wave them in the air, and a staff member will come by to collect them. We will get through as many of the questions as time will allow. Please note on the question which candidate the question is for, or if it's for all three. And I realize there are a number of supporters for each of the candidates in the crowd today, so if a question looks like it's a setup or a softball question, it's probably not going to get asked. Our forum will conclude with each candidate being able to give a 2-minute final closing statement. Let's start by introducing the head table. Seated to my right is Joe Miller, Republican Party candidate for U.S. Senate. Seated next to Mr. Miller is Senator Lisa Murkowski, current U.S. Senator and write-in candidate for U.S. Senate. And seated next to Senator Murkowski is Scott McAdams, the Democrat Party candidate for U.S. Senate. Please join me in a warm round of applause for each of today's candidates. Candidates, the most important person in the room for you today is our ever-vigilant timekeeper, Dana. Wait, there's Dana, right down there. Dana will be timing your responses and will be holding up 30-second and 10-second warning signs. If you do not wrap up your answer at the 10-second warning, you are likely to hear this sound. This will indicate your time is up. This will also be the last polite warning you receive. In the interest of fairness and our carefully honed time limitations, if you continue to answer the questions after the bell sounds, I will be forced to interrupt you. If that doesn't work, I will be forced to begin singing, and trust me, no one wants that, so don't be responsible for that. Now to our first round of questions. In this round, each of the questions, although based on the same general theme, are tailored to each individual candidate. You will have 2.5 minutes to answer each question. And we begin with Mr. Miller. Mr. Miller, your campaign commercials indicate that in order to change Washington, you have to change the people there. Given that not every seat will change hands this election, if elected, how do you plan on fulfilling your campaign promise to change Washington while having to work within the existing Congress?
Well, I think it's important to realize that electing Joe Miller to the U.S. Senate is not a one-man show. It clearly is more than just Joe. that is changing D.C. Throughout the United States, there's a tremendous move, and it's really a grassroots movement, that recognizes that the federal government is broken. It's nearing bankruptcy. We have to recognize that. That's where we're at. $13.5 trillion in debt, almost 13.6. Future unfunded obligations, the National Review indicated $130 trillion. That works out to almost $400,000 per person. And that really has motivated people. They understand not just because of the debt crisis, but they also understand because of the overreach of the federal government that we're at a point now that really people don't like. It's not just the issue of a broken federal government. It's an issue of too much power coming out of D.C. You know, my hometown of Fairbanks, I've mentioned this in several forums before, we now are at a point where I can't burn wood in my wood stove at certain times in the winter because of mandates from the federal government that are passed down through the borough government. That's not really what we expect out of our federal government. But that kind of movement has translated into a lot of people getting elected from outside the establishment. We see that in primary elections throughout the United States. And these are a group of people that are very much focused on changing D.C., not being co-opted by the system, but by moving forward in a new direction. And that means restricting the power of the government, making sure that the states have more resources, that the states have more power. For Alaska, of course, that's very good news. Joining in coalition with those type of people that are being elected will allow us to have greater control over our destiny at statehood. You know, one of the biggest debates that we had in the state was, or in not only at the state, but also the national level, was whether or not this state could have an independent economy, or whether we'd be dependent on the federal government. Well, clearly, at the point we're at today, 40% of our economy in some way derived from the federal government, we know we've kind of gone the dependency route. And we know that with a bankrupt federal government, we've got to move in a different direction. That doesn't mean federal funds get cut off when you elect Joe Miller. But what it does mean that moving with this group that wants to have more power in the states for Alaska is a tremendous opportunity because we do have a resource base, as our founders understood, that can move the economy of the state forward in ways that it's never been moved before. And it also allows us to have eggs in a basket other than just the federal government, but in a basket that we have more control and discretion over. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Next question is for Senator Murkowski. As the electorate seems in recent elections to seek change and express frustration about gridlock in D.C., how do you convince voters that your reelection will not simply result in maintaining the status quo?
There clearly is gridlock in Washington, D.C. There clearly is a great deal of frustration with what people perceive as their government not being friendly to them, not working with them, but really working against them. So the question as to how we get beyond the gridlock is an important one for purposes of this election here in Alaska and really around the country. So how do you avoid the gridlock? Well, ladies and gentlemen, it comes when we sit down and we talk with one another. Right now, you've got Republicans that are so far in one corner and Democrats that are pushed so far in another corner that to come together into the middle to allow for a level of good governance is just darn hard. So what happens is you say, well, we're going to build up our numbers on our side so that we can retake the majority, so that we will have more than them. Well, what about focusing on the good ideas that build good policies, whether they're Republican ideas or whether they're Democrat ideas? What about coming together and saying, we've got some things that are important for this country, we've got some things that are important for this state? And that's why I have taken a somewhat unprecedented step by advancing myself, not necessarily as a Republican. I'm still a Republican. Was a Republican when I registered to vote at 18, and I'm a Republican to this day, and I'll go back to the United States Senate as a Republican. But what I offer Alaskans now is putting Alaska ahead of our parties. That's what we should be focused on in this state. That's, quite honestly, what we need to be focused on back in Washington, D.C., is how we take the good ideas from all parties, Republicans and independents from all regions of the country, whether it's rural America or urban America, whether it's the East Coast or the West Coast, and coming together. That's what people in this country are hoping for, is a level of bipartisanship, an ability to build consensus to make good policy for this nation. That's what I'm offering for Alaska in this election.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. McAdams, a question for you. Your public service experience has been limited chiefly to serving as a mayor of a small, albeit beautiful, town. And some early interviews after your primary victory led to some concern regarding your comfort with national issues. If elected, do you feel your previous experience will sufficiently equip you for being a U.S. Senator in these very demanding times? And if so, how?
Thank you. You know, I'd like to begin by saying, first of all, thank you to the Chamber for hosting this debate. Thank you to the first food service workers who are providing us with a great lunch today. As it relates to my experience, you know, I've been a locally elected guy in my community for the last 8 years. I've had the chance to stand before my community, answer questions of policy and budget. And I would share with the group today that I can't think of anything that would have better prepared me for both this campaign and this office than having held myself accountable to my community over the last 8 years as a locally elected leader. You know, as it relates to my resume and then back to national issues, so I have been a local guy, 6 years on a local school board, 2 years as mayor of the city and borough of Sitka. But during that time, I wasn't a passive governance person. I got active in my region, I got active in my state, I've even been active at the national level. For those who may not be familiar with me and my resume, I'm a past president of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I'm the chairman of the Southeast Alaska Conference of Mayors. I am a former board member of Alaska Municipal League. I serve currently on the Alaska Humanities Forum. I have been a past member of the Alaska State Council on the Arts Subcommittee for Education, School Education in the Arts. So, you know, I have had the opportunity to be part of dialogues beyond the narrow scope of just what's happening in my town. Albeit, I think that serving my community of Sitka, we own our local utility, so I, as mayor, am the de facto governance chair of our utility board. We own our local hospital, so I am the person who, I am an appropriator as it relates to our local hospital when they need to come for equipment. So, you know, I believe that as somebody who has served my little community, I'm ready to serve. But, you know, I would say this. There was a time in our state when Lisa's dad had 3 years as a school board member in Wrangell, ran once for Senate and lost, ran a second time and won. When Lisa became a United States Senator, she had 4 years experience serving her community here in Anchorage. I have 8 years experience serving my local community, and so I do believe I'm qualified.
Thank you, Mr. McAdams. Our second round of questions has each candidate answering the same question. It's a bit of a long one, so please bear with me. Americans recognize that as a nation, we face some daunting challenges. A ballooning deficit, a mountainous national debt, a vague and costly war on terror, declining economic competitiveness, and poor educational results compared to other developed countries, just to name a few. Americans also realize that when you have big problems to fix, it typically takes a certain amount of pain and/or sacrifice. However, our political system makes it seemingly impossible for elected officials to press for policies that require either pain or sacrifice. If elected, do you plan to push for any changes that will call for the American people to endure any painful changes or sacrifices? And if so, what would those changes and/or sacrifices be? Or, if you do not believe that any pain or sacrifice is called for in order to remedy our current host of problems, please elaborate on how you would propose to address America's current dilemmas without such pain or sacrifice. And Senator Murkowski, we begin with you.
I think there is agreement amongst the three of us at this table that this country is facing unprecedented levels of debt. We have seen unprecedented levels of spending. And as you note, we are engaged in conflicts, war in Iraq and Afghanistan. The pressures on us as a nation are as intense and acute as they have been. This is not the time to send someone to Washington, D.C. from our state that simply lacks the experience. This is not the time for on-the-job training. So your question is a good one. What are we prepared to do as leaders? Are we prepared to lead when it comes to reduction in spending? I took a pretty tough step this year with the Appropriations Committee. You'll see some materials on your table. It says that Lisa has voted against all of these things in this past year on the Appropriations Committee. We took a very difficult position in pushing back against the administration and saying that the top line number on spending needs to be reduced. We need to take an active and aggressive step in reducing it. We worked to get it down a little bit, but the Democrats would not come along. They would not agree to reduce the level of top-line spending. So when those appropriations bills came to us in the Appropriations Committee, it was important to say, we've got to start somewhere, so we're not going to advance these appropriations bills until we can get that top line down. That's one way that you start. Another way that we start, we've got to recognize that it's not in the earmarks, it's not in the discretionary spending that we're really going to see reductions in our deficit. It comes when we take on the big stuff, the entitlement programs. One way that I think we've got to critically look at is the Social Security program. We know that we've got more that are receiving from the program that are paying in. We've got two bipartisan commissions that are actually looking to what is the best way. Is it to increase taxes, as Scott is saying? Is it to just completely start over with Social Security reform, as Joe has suggested? Or is it possible that we need to look to increasing the year within which an individual goes on Social Security? These are some of the issues that we need to be looking at critically, because it's the entitlement spending that will make the difference.
Thank you, Senator Murkowski. Mr. McAdams, now the same question for you, the pain and sacrifice question.
Thank you. Regarding pain and sacrifice, there's no question in this country that our $13 trillion debt is unsustainable, that we do have some storms ahead as it relates to the unfunded liability of some of our national programs. But let me share with you this. I do not believe that you balance the federal budget on the backs of kids, seniors, working people, or a young and developing state, while at the same time, we have policymakers in Washington, D.C. who continue to provide tax loopholes for multinational corporations and tax cuts for the richest 1% of America's multimillionaires. You know, taking a look at what do we do next, how do we begin to solve this problem? It was mentioned Social Security. You know, Social Security, when you take a look at the solvency of the plan, status quo has it relatively healthy through the middle of this century. But you know, there is one simple fix, but it's a matter of budget priority. It's a matter of personal priority and values. Right now, a person on the North Slope who makes $106,000 as a slope worker pays the same type of payroll tax for Social Security as a Wall Street CEO who makes $10 million a year. That's not right. You lift that cap, the program solvency for as far as we can see. So I mean, certainly we are going to have to get serious about our budget. I'm the only person in this race who's actually ever cut a public budget. We just cut $1.4 million out of a $25 million budget for FY11 in my borough. You know, when I go to Washington, D.C., my priorities will be America's working people, it'll be kids, it'll be seniors. You know, I believe demand creates its own supply. When you put money in the hands of working people, that's how you build a middle class and build an economy. I also believe that we can reclaim an American manufacturing sector. We can even reclaim an American resource extracting sector that is the green choice in the global marketplace that will put Alaskans to work. Those are my values, and that's what I'll stand for in Washington, D.C.
Thank you, Mr. McAdams. Now, Mr. Miller, same question for you.
Well, there's going to be pain. Are we on? There's going to be pain whether we like it or not. We have a structural debt problem that is going to enforce upon this country significant changes, whether it comes through a crisis of debt like what Greece had, or whether it comes from basically responsible decision making in D.C. And I can tell you, if you think that this is not the time to send good, bold leadership to D.C., think again. Again, I get to the point that I made earlier, and that's the diversification of this economy. We've got to get that 40% from the federal government down, because the federal government in the long term is not going to continue to fund us that way. But I can tell you, as far as sending past leadership back to D.C., Senator Murkowski, when she took office, the federal deficit was half of what it is today. The reason why it continues to expand at such a rate that it's killing the American economy and may end up creating a sovereign debt crisis in this nation is because of failed leadership from both parties. This is an issue of, for example, earmarks. Now, that's one of the issues that I've talked about in my campaign. That is some pain. There's no question about it. In this state, of course, the role of earmarks has been reduced significantly over the last several years, but it is the single most corrupting influence in Congress. We scratch our heads and we wonder, why do these huge bills get passed out full of entitlements, driving this deficit this year $1.6 trillion? And then we understand when we see that congressmen and women are held hostage by the earmarks that they're promised. If they don't vote for the package, they lose their earmark. Now, we've got to do something in this state. My view of it is to get the federal government off our back so we can develop our resources, to fight as hard as we fought for earmarks in the past, but to fight not for earmarks, but fight for our resources. Those resources so that we can develop them without the regulatory burden, so that we can get in our backyard and develop economy, so when the federal dollars do end, and they will eventually end at some rate. They aren't going to continue at the rate they are today, folks. They can't. We know that. I mean, our budget right now, if you look at it today, Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, and servicing to debt, that's equal to the revenues coming into this country at the federal level. So, you know, all of the other roles of government, the Department of Defense, the other important functions of government are deficit spending, and it gets worse, people. Now, we have an exciting future in this state. We have phenomenal opportunities to create jobs, but we've got to fight in that direction and not continue to put all those eggs in the basket of the failed policies of D.C.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Our third round of questions is, again, a question tailored to each individual candidate. And we begin with Mr. McAdams this round. Mr. McAdams, your website states that you are in favor of tax incentives to spur small business job creation because 56% of Alaskan jobs are with companies who have fewer than 500 employees. Based on your own statistics, large businesses therefore account for 44% of Alaskan employment. Why limit your support to only small business incentives and not also encourage and incentivize hiring by large businesses as well?
Thank you. Well, certainly small business is the driver in both this state's and this nation's economy. And when you take a look at parity and equity in how we pay for the cost of government in this country, I think that every user group should share in an equal way in making sure that America's commitments and obligations are met. You know, when you take a look at this country, Senator Murkowski mentioned she's a Republican. I am a Democrat. I'm not ashamed of being a Democrat. I'm not afraid to say that I'm a Democrat. I might have a little bit different view of the world as it relates to the richest 1% of Americans and the shared responsibility that I think that corporate America plays in making sure that they pay their fair share of our nation's cost of doing government. What I do know is that since 1980, prior to 1980, 40% of the cost of doing government in America was paid by corporations. That's 7% today. Do I think that things have gone a little bit out of alignment in this country? I do. I have some of the same concerns about the future of this country and the solvency of this country that Mr. Miller and Senator Murkowski have. I just don't think that you balance a national budget on the backs of the middle class and small business people while we continue to incentivize outsourcing and offshoring to multinational corporations.
Thank you, Mr. McAdams. Mr. Miller, the question is now for you. As you are aware, a significant percentage of Alaska's economy is directly tied to federal funds. While you have recently indicated that you would continue to seek Alaska's fair share of federal funding if elected, you also suggested a desire to phase out a certain amount of funding over time. Can you explain for us what your plan is for the phasing out of certain federal funding and how you plan on ensuring Alaska is prepared for any diminishment in the support it receives from Washington, either now or in the future?
And this ties into the answers I gave to the other two questions as well. And that is, again, whether we like it or not, the funds are going to shrink. And we know that because of where we're at as a nation, with the spending that is occurring, and with the revenues that are coming into this nation. We know that taxes are not going to be raised. They can't be. You know, right now, the economy is headed in the direction that's killing jobs. I mean, anybody that takes the Democrats or the moderate Republicans' view that stimulus bills are the way to go to grow the economy when you're growing government, that's not the answer. And that's part of the concern that we have in this state as well, that we are so dependent on the federal dollar coming in. I will tell you this, one of the bright spots for Alaska is that we have a very important geostrategic position vis-a-vis the other nations in the world. You know, of that 40% of the federal money that comes into the state, a very large percentage of that is defense related. Now, I'm a combat vet, went to West Point, served my country. The state itself has more veterans on a per capita basis of any other state. So we have a very good understanding of the need for a strong defense, a strong military. And I think most of us sitting in this room also understand the need for Alaska to continue to hold a very central role in defending the national interest of this country. So I can tell you that one of the areas that I'm going to work very hard in is to ensure that we maintain that standing, that one of those areas where government does things right, the national defense, that Alaska still stay at the top with regard to the funding, with regard to establishing the infrastructure to ensure that our military has that leading role that Alaska helps it keep. Also in the Arctic, we know that in the Arctic we have a number of different allies and some not so allied to us exploring the resource base there, trying to gain a foothold there. Got to develop, obviously, a strong presence there. The Coast Guard is a fantastic option for that. We don't have a good presence there, and we need to work in that direction. But we do know that things are going to happen in Congress where funding is going to get restricted, and likely it's going to happen on a percentage basis. The people that are coming into Congress that are being told, given the mandate from the people that are electing them, is that we've got to restrict the spending. I think that that probably is going to happen in entitlements on a percentage basis year by year by year until we end up getting the budget into a great standing where we can go back and say, look, we are a nation whose credit is good again. We are a nation that's not going to get downgraded by China. You might not know this, but China actually downgraded our credit several weeks ago. Our own bond rating agency is getting ready to do the same. And so we are going to have to take painful steps of that measure. But we are going to focus on those areas to strengthen Alaska, not just at its resource base to create jobs, but also those other areas, including the national defense, our military post, to ensure that Alaska continues to play that leading role that we all know it should have.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Senator Murkowski. Senator, you were defeated in the Republican primary and are now engaged in a writing campaign which clearly seeks support from both Republican and Democrat voters. I believe that you have previously indicated that if elected, you plan to continue to caucus with the Republicans in the Senate. Our question is, would you still consider yourself, and I think you've already answered this, a Republican? And if so, what do you say to Democrat voters as to why they should support your candidacy over the candidate of their own party?
As I indicated earlier, when I registered to vote at 18, I registered as a Republican. I have remained a Republican throughout, and there have been times when I have not really been very happy with my Republican Party. But I stuck with my party, unlike Joe Miller, who is the Republican nominee and yet changed four different times his party registration. For a host of different reasons, you can ask him. But I have stuck with my party. But I am in this race as a write-in candidate, and I am in this race because I am standing for Alaskans. I am standing as part of the process that allows for a write-in candidacy to move forward. If there is support amongst the people for such an endeavor. And after I lost this primary to this gentleman who received about 12% of the vote, and this gentleman who received about 3.5% of the vote, I figured there's about 85% in there that did not speak up loudly and clearly in this process. And they asked me to do so, and I have done so. I am running still as a Republican. I will be returned to the United States Senate with the 8 years of seniority that I have accrued. I will still be the most senior member on the Energy Committee. I will still be on the Appropriations Committee, having moved up on that slot. I will be able to return to Washington, D.C. with a level of seniority and respect that has been built over that 8 years. So when the question is asked, why do you stay within this effort? Why have you continued on in this process? It is because I have listened to the people of the state of Alaska that have asked me to give them a choice. And I have said, just as Ted Stevens has said, to hell with politics, let's do what's right for Alaska, let's give Alaskans the option on November 2nd, and I'm doing exactly that.
Our fourth round of questions focuses on another hot-button national issue, healthcare reform. Each of you will be asked to respond to the same question. As we all know, Congress recently passed a sweeping health care reform law. If elected, would you seek to revoke the law, modify the law, or support the law as is? If you desire to modify the law, please explain with specifics the areas of the law you are opposed to or would seek to modify. If you support the existing law, please explain why. And if you desire to revoke the law, please explain any other plans you may have for dealing with the unsustainable health care increases that businesses and individuals have been subject to in recent years. And Mr. Miller, we begin this round with you.
Well, as a former undeclared nonpartisan voter, I stand with the majority of Alaskans in that category. And I will tell you that I am not going to follow the mandate necessarily of party with respect to the health care law. But I will tell you this, that the Obamacare bill is the biggest federal takeover that we've seen in decades, almost 20% of the federal economy. It's something that we can't tolerate. It's got to be repealed. The likelihood over the next 2 years that happens is low. We have an unfriendly presidential administration that probably will veto such an effort. There may be some low-hanging fruit in the bill that could be repealed. I think that there is kind of a bipartisan approach, for example, to get rid of that 1099 requirement that not many of us knew about when it was first passed, requiring $600 transactions to be reported. And I think we ought to work hard in that direction. But if the repeal falls, then obviously it has to be defunded. And we've got to make sure that the federal government cannot take that power grab and continue to expand its power in a way that's going to hurt our economy and really doesn't bring real reform. What it's going to end up doing is it's going to end up, I think, restricting care and access to care. There are other ways that we can work forward, I think, to reforming the healthcare system in this country. The problem that we have right now in healthcare is that the free enterprise system really is not what's making the decisions. Most of us have insurance, Medicare, Medicaid. In fact, in this state, over 80% IHS. And yet, what does that do? When we make a decision based on convenience primarily, not based on cost. What we have to look toward are some solutions that can help bring the free enterprise system back to the medical community. And what that means is, I would suggest, expanding health savings accounts, not putting limits on them, not requiring that the money that's paid into those accounts at the end of the year be forfeited, but allowing them to be rolled over, allowing the funds to be inheritable, allowing a large amount of money to be built up in those accounts so that a significant portion of medical decisions can be made by the individual with those funds, so it becomes a decision based upon cost and also quality of care rather than convenience. Allowing, of course, tax incentivizing catastrophic programs, but we've got to think outside the box. Allowing the purchase, for example, of insurance across state lines, allowing consortiums across state lines to create health associations, to create, again, programs that bring lower costs to individuals. But at the base of it, we got to get the free enterprise system back into it, where individuals are making decisions based upon cost and quality of care.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Senator Murkowski, the same question for you on health care reform.
Thank you. Well, my record on health care reform has been very, very clear, because I do have a record. I have had an opportunity to vote for things and vote against things. And despite what Joe Miller has maintained, I have voted to not only oppose the Obama health care plan, but I voted to repeal it I am on as a co-sponsor of three different efforts to repeal, in addition to the 8 times that I voted against it. So I don't know how much clearer I can make that I don't support what the Congress passed and what the President signed into law. The real question is, now what do we do? What do we do? Because it is in law and it's moving forward. It's going to be in place by 2014, but beginning now, you are going to see the burden because you will be paying for it through increased taxes, through your Medicare tax increases, through these 1099 filings that you will be required to do. The effort to repeal will continue. I actually agree with Joe Miller. I don't think that as long as the President is in office that we will be successful in wholesale reform or repeal, but I do believe that there are pieces that can be reviewed as we move forward. I think it's important to recognize what is going on at the same time through the judicial branch, through the courts, the legal challenges that have been made towards the constitutionality of the individual mandate. I think we will see that play out. I do believe very strongly, though, that if we repeal health care reform as it exists in law today, we must, as a Congress and as a nation, reform health care. We did not do it with this bill. We have not increased access nor decreased your costs, and you're going to be seeing this in these upcoming years. We owe it to the American people to figure out how we rein in the costs. And how can we do it? We can start with some things that have been put in place in several other states, like Texas and California, where they have put in place real solid substantive medical malpractice liability reform. We, as a small market in Alaska, need to be able to purchase across state lines in order to reduce the costs that come to us in terms of the insurance. We need to be a more attractive market. Right now, the law prohibits that. We need to look at how we redesign the delivery model. We've got some good examples here in Alaska that we can look to. This isn't rocket science. It just requires the political initiative to do so.
Thank you, Senator. Now, Mr. McAdams, the same question on health care reform.
Thank you. You know, I think that when we reflect on all that led up to the healthcare reform process and the vote, this is a profile, this experience, this history is a profile in how Washington, D.C. is broken and what's wrong with Washington, D.C. You know, with 150 Republican amendments, this bill could as well be called Mitch McConnell Care as it's called Obamacare. But I'll tell you, I think that it was wrong, Mr. Miller, that you did mischaracterize the senator's record on this. She clearly voted no, and she clearly voted to repeal. Mr. Miller believes in repeal. Senator Murkowski believes in repeal. I believe we should take what is good about this bill, maintain it, and improve on some of the challenges that are laid out. Look, I am a local governance guy. I'm somebody who has stood on his head invoking the 10th Amendment as it relates to No Child Left Behind and the federal intrusion into the classroom as it relates to developing our kids and making sure that we have local values and local ideas. They're woven into the curriculum. Having said that, one of the things that is a problem for me with this bill is the individual mandate. Anytime you have an unfunded federal mandate, whether it's in a personal setting or in a community setting, that's problematic. So that's one thing I'd like to take a look at as we work to improve this bill and not repeal it. You know, Senator, I appreciate your thoughts, some of the things that you're saying, but I don't think, you know, one of the things I'm going to really strive to do is not mischaracterize you during the course of the general election. But, you know, the same idea of bipartisanship isn't reflected, Senator, in your record. Over the last year in particular, you have voted with Mitch McConnell 90% of the time. I think we need to send a proven bipartisan to Washington, D.C. You know, when I was the president of the State School Board Association, I didn't represent liberal kids or conservative school board members. In fact, I'd venture to say that there's more Republicans than there are Democrats in that group. But they trusted me to move forward a common vision because they knew I would put Alaska and kids before my own personal ideology. When I'm a senator, I'll do the same thing.
Our Our fifth and final round of Anchorage Chamber questions is once again the same for all candidates, and it involves the issue of foreign policy. As a U.S. Senator, you will be required to debate and vote on extremely critical issues of foreign policy. And as a representative of Alaska, you will be representing a state with a strong connection, both emotionally and economically, to the military. Next month marks the 10th anniversary of the war in Afghanistan. And daily we are faced with reports that question our ability to ultimately succeed in that endeavor. If elected to the U.S. Senate, representing Alaska, please describe your position or philosophy regarding how to proceed with the war on terror. And Senator, we'll begin this round with you.
Well, I smile because if I had all the answers, I think I would probably be sitting where General Petraeus is. This is, as we all know, extraordinarily difficult for us as a nation as we deal with the war on terror. 10 years in Afghanistan, in the years in Iraq, the stress, the pressures on us as a nation, and really how we deal with not only a nation, but a region that has been struggling for centuries. Our efforts, I think we recognize, we've seen the positive events in Iraq as we have made it through a series of elections and now with a drawdown. We recognize that as we leave Iraq, we leave a nation that is still troubled, where the levels of violence remain, where an electoral process has not yet been put in place. And we look to our efforts in Afghanistan and must ask the same questions. Are the efforts that we have undergone for these many years, will they result in a net positive for not only Afghanistan, but for the sacrifices that our men and our women have made as they have stood with our nation? It is fair, it is appropriate for us to be questioning the role of the U.S. presence in Afghanistan, in Iraq, wherever we are. What we can never question, though, is our commitment to the men and the women that are serving us. The expenditures that we make as a nation, whether it is for their equipment, whether it is for the training, whether it is for the resources that they need to engage in the fight, we must never question what we are providing them. As long as the mission has been stated, we must back those who are fulfilling this mission. I wish that I could tell this assembled body what success in Afghanistan means. I wish that General Petraeus could tell us what success in Afghanistan means. But my commitment is to stand with the men and women that we have asked, that we have tasked to serve us, and to do so unwaveringly.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. McAdams, the same question for you.
Thank you. I think that, first of all, as it relates to both Afghanistan and the threat of terrorism across the globe, Al-Qaeda still remains a threat. It remains a threat to the West. Al-Qaeda needs to be contained. As it relates to Afghanistan, I believe we need to give General Petraeus some time to help us refocus our mission there, help us understand what success looks like. But here is my pledge to Alaska. As Alaska's next United States Senator, before I ever push the button and vote to appropriate for a military engagement, I will be dogged with the administration to make sure that we have a clearly defined mission and purpose, and that we can absolutely articulate and define what success looks like. Because what I know is that neither in our treasury nor in human life can we afford to continue to be an occupying force and engaged in endless war across the planet without a purpose and without a mission. So I will ask the administration every single time we vote on this. As it relates to Alaska, our veterans in Alaska, our military history and tradition, and our military presence in Alaska, you know, I'll continue to fight to make sure that our bases are kept whole in this state. You know, we have such a strategic position here in the North Pacific. It is in America's national security interest that Alaska continue to be a strong presence as it relates to our United States military.
Thank you, Mr. McAdams. Mr. Miller, the same question for you.
This nation is in a crisis of leadership, and it's reflected not just in the debt, it's also reflected in foreign policy decisions. We are right now engaged in what I consider to be feel-good foreign policy. That's where we go across the globe and we determine what's best in a nation, and we make a decision to impose a new form of government in many cases in nations where for millennia they've known a different form of government, where they have ethnic rivalries or the like. We do not have the financial capacity to continue to fight wars throughout the world and impose different forms of countries, different forms of governance in countries. And my perspective is, of all of the issues that our country faces today, along with the national deficit, terrorism, though, ranks at the very highest point. What we have to do as a nation is make sure that our efforts, that our finances are directed with a laser focus to eliminating those threats across the globe. If we have a nation like Iran, for example, that we know because President Ahmadinejad says, look, I want to develop nuclear weapons, I want to destroy Israel, I want to threaten the United States, we have to make sure that that country does not achieve the ability to deliver a nuclear bomb to the soil of the United States. We have to. One bomb, one city, catastrophe. So that has got to be the core focus. It's not going around and sacrificing our men and women in countries to impose democracy, as good as that might sound. I mean, there are all sorts of great things government can do, but the question is, can it and should it? Is it appropriate? Is that the rule of the federal government? My answer is, we've got men and women in service. You know, when I joined back in 1985, went to West Point, I can tell you of my classmates almost universally, they opposed the idea of feel-good foreign policy, going out and imposing democracy in other countries. They joined to defend their nation. They joined to fight for us, to protect us from the type of things that happened on 9/11. Now, we're embroiled in two conflicts, one winding down, another ongoing. Where we're committed in Afghanistan, clearly we've got to continue to maintain the commitment to our troops on the ground. We put them there, we can't leave them hanging. But we've got to be focused on why we're there. Are we there to impose democracy, or are we there to eliminate a threat? Some may try to merge the two together, but frankly, the priority has got to be eliminating threat and then getting out. I was in Desert Storm, 1990, 91, and in Desert Storm, we got in and we got out. It was a fantastic example of American military power done right, and that really has got to be the way we do business in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. And that wraps up our questions from the Anchorage Chamber today.
You are listening to KSKA's Addressing Alaskans, with the candidates running for United States Senator in Alaska's general election on November 2nd. The Anchorage Chamber of Commerce hosted Democrat Scott McAdams, Republican Joe Miller, and write-in candidate Lisa Murkowski at the Dena'ina Center in Anchorage this past Monday, October 11th. Candidates responded to questions from the Anchorage Chamber in the first half of the program. In the second half, the candidates ask each other questions and then respond to those from the audience.
And Mr. McAdams, we're going to begin this round with you. To who would you like to direct a question?
Senator Murkowski. Thank you. Senator, a lot of folks are aware that Mr. Miller has signed a national pledge promising that he will not vote for any appropriation that's not part of the regular president's regular budget, or vote for any earmark or request made by a local government. Yet I would ask you, and it reflects back to the papers that you were mentioning just a few moments ago, how is it that the Appropriations Committee used to be a committee made up of folks like Senator Stevens, Senator Inouye, Senator Byrd, and there was always an understanding that our young states, our developing states, that Republicans and Democrats would work together so that when a Republican was in the chair, the Democrats' needs in young states would be cared for, and vice versa. Could you please explain to us how it is that you voted against 11 straight appropriations bills in committee on the Appropriations Committee?
My appreciate the opportunity to speak to it because it does require more than a 30-second soundbite, and that was all we had at the last forum. As I mentioned, when we began the appropriation cycle this year, it was important, critically important, to make an effort to reduce the top line spending amount. The president's budget was one that even the Democrats recognized was unacceptably high. As Republicans, we looked at that budget and we said, we've got to do what we can to reduce the top line amount. Our proposal was to bring it down by a $20 billion amount. The Democrats came down a little bit, but acknowledged that, in fact, they were not going to be going down much further. So they sat on their side of the table, crossed their arms, and said, we're not going to go. Republicans said, look, what we are holding this at, this is a freeze. This is a freeze from the prior year. This was a proposal that was actually a bipartisan proposal. It was Senator Sessions, Senator McCaskill, who had urged us, we can hold our spending to last year's level. That's not asking too much. But we couldn't get our Democratic counterparts on the Appropriations Committee to agree to that. So the effort was made, let's try to work it within our own appropriations subcommittees so that we can reduce this amount so that collectively we can hold this to last year's levels. Again, not an unreasonable request. In some of the subcommittees, they were able to do that. The subcommittee that I serve on, we were able to do even more than holding it to last year's numbers. But overall, the committee would not agree to a reduction in that top line spending. So the effort was then made, we're going to vote against these appropriations bills when they move through the markup until such time as we can move these things to the floor and determine if, in fact, we can't keep the spending to the level of last year. That was an effort that we need to make, and I think most of us in this room would agree that when your budget is out of whack in your business or in your family, you look to what you did last year and you're trying to do a little bit better this year. That's what we were trying to do in the Appropriations Committee.
Thanks to both of you. Mr. Miller, it is now your opportunity to ask a question of one of your fellow candidates.
Question to Senator Murkowski. Senator, you voted for the $700 billion TARP program. And I'm curious as to whether you still believe that's good public policy, whether you'd vote for that same sort of bill again in the future, and whether you were heavily invested in some of the same commercial banks that you voted to bail out in that bill.
I did, in fact, vote for the TARP bill at the time. This was back in 2008 when it was not only the recommendation of those within the Bush administration, but a bipartisan group of advisors, those in the Senate, those in the Congress, looked at where our nation was at that point in time and said, we've got to do something because we are going over the cliff. Nobody liked the option that we had in front of us. But it was not a situation of trying to figure out what's the crystal ball going to say in 2 years. Right now, our nation, our financial situation is in a crisis, and what do we do? And so it was either 75 or 76 votes in the Senate to vote for that TARP bailout. Now, I've said before that I would not have voted the same way, knowing what I know now, as when I took that vote. But you don't have any redos in that sense. What I wish that we would have done is we had put more parameters on it so that we didn't have what we have now, which is this, essentially, it's a slush fund that the Democrats keep tapping into to pay for other spending programs. And so on every single occasion to pull back those funds that were sitting out there, that were paid back in, that were then attempted to be used for something else, I have voted to cut those off. Now, Joe, you have suggested that somehow or other I am invested in some of these banks that I have bailed out. I do have and education. I've got two education IRAs for my kids. My husband and I have our retirement IRAs that we have that are invested in different vehicles, but I don't have any investments in these major banks. Where I invest is in my local banks. First Bank of Ketchikan, a family-owned bank down there. I was actually the beneficiary of some stock from National Bank of Alaska that my grandparents had when they first came to Alaska. That's been bought out by Wells Fargo. So if you're talking about Wells Fargo, I confess, I've got shares in Wells Fargo.
Thank you both. Finally, Senator Murkowski, if you would like to, you can address a question to one of your fellow candidates.
Okay, well, since everyone's been asking a question to me, I suppose I could ask one to me, but I'm going to ask, I'm going to ask this of Mr. McAdams, and this has been mentioned before, but as I've indicated, when I go back to the United States Senate in January, I will be the most senior member on the Energy Committee, depending on which way the elections go, either the ranking member or hopefully the chairman of that committee. I will also be on the Appropriations Committee. We'll be moving 5 seats up on that committee. I have been on the Indian Affairs Committee, an important committee to so many of our constituents here in this state, and continue to be the most senior member on that committee. The question that I have of you, Scott, is if either you or Mr. Miller were elected to serve in the Senate, our state, Alaska, would have the least senior delegation in the entire Senate. Our senior senator would then be Mark Begich with just 2 years of service, and you would be coming in as a very freshman senator. Can you tell me why you think that that would be in the best interests of the state of Alaska?
Thank you, Senator. I do think it is in the best interest of the state of Alaska that I become the state's next United States senator. And while I certainly respect the eight years that you've put there, I also ask, back to the earlier question, if utilizing that seniority means voting against 11 straight appropriations bills that included $400 million in projects to build the infrastructure in a young state, is that seniority being well used? But let me make the case, we are in a room full of business people. We need to do a few things in this state to move the state forward, because right now we have little vision as to what is going to sustain us beyond Prudhoe Bay Oil. Alaska's natural resources are like an empty house on the market. And we've been trying to sell it for years and years and years using the same marketing plan and the same agents. Well, I would say I'd recommend that we actually change agents and take on a new strategy. Senator Begich has been very supportive of my campaign. I appreciate the senator's service. But, both Mark and I are pro-resource development Democrats. The problem hasn't been the Republican Party in opening up Alaska, it's been the Democratic Party. Well, every single one of you folks in business recognizes when you're trying to break into a new market, let's say you want to break into a new demographic or a new neighborhood, chances are you might hire somebody for your company that represents that demographic, reflects that neighborhood, is from that community. I believe that Mark and I have something to prove. Nobody to blame, but something to prove as it relates to finally bringing Alaska's natural resources to market. I'd make the case that having 2 pro-development Democrats in the United States Senate makes sense for Alaska, because right now we cannot afford another 8 years of Alaska's natural resources locked up. Not just our private sector, but even our public sector can't sustain that. Whether or not you work in oil services or you're a teacher in an elementary school, this is an oil state. We need to put Alaskans to work and open up our resources for a global marketplace.
Thank you to all the candidates. That concludes that portion of our program. We next move to the ever-popular questions from the audience. I've received more questions from the audience than could be read before their terms would expire. We'll try to get through some of the more interesting ones or the more relevant ones as quickly as we can. The candidates have 1 minute for responses to these questions. And this is for all the candidates. Recently, Alaska Native Regional Corporations, and in particular the 8A program that they are heavily involved in, has come under a lot of criticism in Washington. What would you do if elected U.S. Senator to aid that program or defend the 8A program? Or if you have another alternative, what would you do with respect to the 8A program? And Mr. Miller, why don't we begin with you?
Well, we know that it's under attack. In fact, there's a senator from Missouri that's introduced a bill to strip it. The 8A contracts obviously do need reform, significant reform. One of the biggest concerns that I have as far as regional corporations go and the contracts that they've received is the fact that there doesn't seem to be a lot of benefit flow back to the shareholders. I would suggest that in reforming the 8A program that we need to focus on shareholder employment, get hardcore numbers out of the contracts that result in actual benefit to our rural communities and the shareholders of those corporations, rather than focused on these monies that ultimately flow in large part to subsidiary corporations where there's not real benefit to the natives themselves. And what we have to do in the state is make sure that the solutions that we have put people to work here, that we get jobs here, again, so that we can sustain this economy when the federal dollars shrink. And that's one way to do it, to incentivize contracts with shareholder employment, rather than the type of thing that sends most of the dollars to subsidiaries and executives that really don't benefit the people that own the corporations themselves.
Thank you. Senator Murkowski?
Well, I have supported the 8A program, and I intend to continue to support the 8A program. We have seen the benefit in this state. We have seen the benefit that comes to Alaska Native shareholders. We have seen the benefit so strongly that there are those on the outside that are looking at this and saying, well, if this is so good for them, how come we don't have a shot at that? Well, because the reason that this was made expanded for our Alaska Natives, Native Hawaiians, and American Indians was to allow for those that have been socioeconomically disadvantaged. We do need to make sure that we get good value for our contracting dollars. That's imperative. We do need to look to make sure that it is being administered in a manner that is clear and transparent. But I will fight against Senator McCaskill and any other senator that wants to take on this program that is doing so much good for so many in this state. It is too important for too many.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. McAdams.
Thank you. I also will continue to support the Small Business Administration's 8A program. It's hard to imagine these skyscrapers at Midtown Anchorage, the great wealth that's been generated, the $5.2 billion that comes to Alaska's regional and village corporations that distributes itself back through Alaska's economy. I think that as it relates to Senator McCaskill, I just sent out a press advisory criticizing Senator McCaskill for her lack of vision in this program. You know, this, when you think about Alaska, here's what's next for our state. My goal throughout the course of my lifetime is to see the day when forever gone is Alaska the colony, where people from the outside come in, extract our resources, take the best bite of our apple, and move their resources and their money offshore. The great thing about both the 8A program and the business acumen that's been built up through it in our Alaska Native corporations is that we have got a great resource ready to serve Alaska for the rest of the century.
Thank you to all candidates. The next question also for all the candidates. Which sitting U.S. Senator do you most admire and why? You have 1 minute, and we'll begin with Senator Murkowski.
My initial reaction is, of course, Senator Ted Stevens, and he is no longer with us. So I hesitate here for a moment, and I'm thinking about those that I am currently serving with and those that I have a great deal of respect for. And I will tell you, those that come to mind are those that I have been able to work across the aisle with, whether it's Senator Tom Carper from Delaware, whether it is Senator Jeff Bingaman from New Mexico. He and I have had a great deal of energy, no pun intended there, but a great deal of energy directed into building an energy policy that is good and strong for this country. And there are many who are doing good for their states that I have a great deal of respect for. But it is, the ones that immediately come to mind are those that are on the other side of the aisle that I have a good working relationship with.
Thank you, Senator. Mr. McAdams.
Thank you. You know, there are great profiles in leadership throughout the United States Senate. And, you know, when I think of people who meet my own personal background, I mean, I think about a guy like Senator John Tester from the northeastern corner of Montana, who is a hardscrabble farmer, spent 6 years on the Big Sandy School Board, and is now the senator from Montana. You know, I look around all over the country. There's so many great leaders. I think that probably the person who I will study under the most, who I will look up to the most, somebody who is the senior senator from another young and developing state, is Senator Daniel Inouye. You know, I'm proud. I think he has got the right vision, and he understands Alaska deeply. He has the right vision for Alaska Native people. I'm also proud to say that he's supporting my campaign, has invested $5,000 from his leadership PAC to my campaign. I look forward to working with him when I win this race.
Thank you, Mr. McAdams. Mr. Miller, same question.
Well, there aren't too many of them in the Congress today that I really agree with, because Congress as a whole has moved this country in a direction that's unsustainable. But I will tell you that there are some stand-up people there. And one of those that's standing up right now, and it doesn't matter as to what cost, it doesn't matter how many people call him names, is Senator DeMint. He's out there. He doesn't care what the others say. He is very, very concerned about this country and wants to stop at nothing to make sure that we can turn it back on the right track. Because he, like I, all of us love our country, but I think that we recognize that the way to the future is not the way of the past. If we continue down the road of where we've gone, it is a dead-end road. And he recognizes he's willing to put the effort forward to make the changes necessary to ensure that this country gets back on track. So I respect that.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. I apologize for all the great questions out there that aren't going to get read because we are limited on time and we have to move into our final closing statements by each of the candidates. Each candidate will now have 2 minutes to close, and we're going to begin that with Mr. Miller.
Well, if you look at where we've been, the last 8 years, for example, we've doubled our national deficit. We're continuing at a rate, like I said before, that is simply a direction we can't go. So we as Alaskans have to understand that we've got to do something. We've got to diversify. We've got to ensure that all the eggs aren't in the federal basket. And so how do we do that? Well, we've got to act aggressively. We've got to work as hard as we've ever worked before. The direction that we've got to work, though, is not the direction that the past has led us to. It's got to be a direction that takes advantage of the absolute most wealth that any state has in this nation. Our wealth is indisputable. It's beneath our feet. It's everywhere in the state, but we have not had access to it in a way that we can diversify so that we can have the ability to stand on our own at the day that our government no longer provides what it has in the past. You know, I've said this in a commercial that probably most of you have seen, but it's accurate. If you want to change D.C., you've got to change the people that are there. You can't vote the old system and expect new things to happen, because they won't. You can't vote the old system and expect that suddenly deficit spending is going to end, or that suddenly we're going to get ourselves out of this fix that we're in right now. You've got to look a new direction. Why do people like me put our hats in the ring? I don't come from the establishment. I come from outside of it. Why do I expose my life to the scrutiny, incomparable scrutiny? Why? Because I love this country. I love the state. I have children that are vested in it. My wife, Kathleen, and I have 8 children that want to make their futures here, that want to stay here. But the direction that we're headed right now as a nation puts the future of this state in balance. We can no longer pursue the way of the past. We must go a new direction. It requires courage, it requires boldness, and it requires fight, something that I'm used to, something that I'm engaged in this race. But I ask you to join with me for the future, for the hope of this country, and for the hope of this state, because we will lead this nation into the future.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Senator Murkowski.
Thank you. I recognize that people are angry and that people are frustrated. But anger is not a platform, and frustration is not the best way to get things done. The way that you move, the way that you govern, is through consensus. It is through working together to advance good ideas for our state and for our nation. Ted Stevens knew this. He lived this. I learned from the best. And I've been doing exactly that in these past 8 years, serving you in the United States Senate. We all know we're a young state. We have so much to give. We've got so much to contribute. But we still need a little help. And that's okay to say that we need that. It's okay to say that we want to have only the best for our military installations. It's okay to say that we want to have only the best for our veterans that have served us honorably. And it's not okay that the only way that they get those veterans is if they happen to live on the road system so that they can access them. We need to say that it's okay to provide for safety nets for the most vulnerable in our society, whether they be our seniors or whether they be our young people or whether they be those who through misfortune are now seeking assistance through unemployment compensation. We need to, as a state, be able to build and utilize the finest of our resources, not just our natural resources, but our human resources. And in order to do so, we need to be working cooperatively. We need to be working collaboratively. I stand before you as a write-in candidate for the United States Senate for another 6-year term to continue fighting for Alaska. Fight with me by filling in the oval and spelling the name. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Senator Murkowski. Mr. McAdams.
Thank you. Thank you to the chamber. Thank you to everyone for sitting here during this lunchtime. You know, there's no question that this is a critically important election at a critically important time in both our state and nation's history. You know, when we win this race, I will move forward the charge that Alaska, as a young state, still needs to be developed, still deserves to be developed. As a matter of equal footing, still has the right to be developed, just as every other state throughout the history of the American West was once developed. You know, the baseline of any economy is reliable transportation, affordable energy, functioning public works infrastructure, an educated populace. You know, I am a mayor who has been to Washington, D.C. as a local elected guy 12 times over the last 8 years, asking for better schools, asking for hydroelectric expansion for my town, asking for ports and harbors and critical economic infrastructure before a D.C. audience. I speak the language. I understand the nomenclature of what it means to need at the local level. You know, Joe Miller has talked about throughout the course of this campaign, but has signed a pledge and made a vow that he will never request or vote on any appropriation that's not part of the president's introduced budget or that is made by a local, and I emphasize local, or special interest. That is dangerous to our young state's economy. Senator Murkowski, using her seniority and her position on the Appropriations Committee, has voted against 11 appropriations bills in the last year, which included $400 million of critical need infrastructure needed to build our state. I'm the person who understands that these investments matter to your businesses, and I'll never forget that when I win this race. Thank you.
This is KSKA Anchorage, and you've been listening to Addressing Alaskans. This week's United States Senatorial Candidate Forum with Lisa Murkowski, Scott McAdams, and Joe Miller was recorded at a luncheon hosted by the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce at the Dena'ina Civic and Convention Center in Anchorage on Monday, October 11th, 2010. You can download today's program or subscribe to free podcasts of Addressing Alaskans on our website at kska.org, where you can also find links to all of the local groups featured on the show each week. to let us know about an upcoming community event that you would like to hear on Addressing Alaskans, just go to kska.org and click on Contact Us at the bottom of the page. This has been a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. For KSKA, I'm Kristen Spack. Thanks for listening.